What's happening, everybody? You're now tuning into the Producer's Corner with Spa Too Tight, and I have a very special show for you today. On the phone with me, I have a very talented singer, jazz performer, vocalist, who's also one of the founding members of the jazz singing group, the Manhattan Transfer. In addition to performing as a group member, she has also performed and recorded with some of the biggest names in the music business, such as Bette Midler, Barry Manilow, James Taylor, and Ashford & Simpson. Please put your hands together and welcome singer and performer, Erin Dickens. Hey, Erin, how's it going?
Hey, Spud, thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you so much, and taking your time, Erin, and coming on my show. It's not every day that I get a chance to talk to industry veterans, and you know, so just to have your presence on the mic with me, it's an honor. Thank you.
Oh, thanks so much.
Well, Erin, your legacy as a musician, you know, again, I'm thinking at least 30 or 40 years in the game. As a true professional musician, and now you're coming out with your CD, Nice Girls, which is, by the way, excellent musicianship, I might add. And, you know, just dating back to some of those old years and see how you are now as a musician, man, you're still seasoned and still on top of your game as a vocalist.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, I like to tell people my mother started Manhattan Transfer. It seems like it was so long ago, but actually, I mean, really back in the day when we started that group, I was underage, and under great protest, she had to sign my record deal for me with Capitol Records because I was too young to sign it.
Wow.
Which is funny, you know, when you think about it.
Well, you know, especially in that age, because there wasn't a lot of young musicians in the 70s and 80s. I mean, there were a few. But, you know, just to have that name Manhattan Transfer, some of the other major groups that are out there, and to be that young, this really says something about your talent, you know what I mean? So,
Well, you know, it was an interesting time because we were just plain weird back then, you know, and we would get placed as opening acts, and some of the great times that we did, we opened for James Taylor, and we opened for Randy Newman, and a lot of wonderful bands like that. But, you know, I'll never forget being booked in Rhode Island opening for Iron Butterfly.
Wow.
And the crowds were like, huh? We were just such a stretch. The college kids really got it, though, and it was really fun to be doing such a different style of music, you know, with the wonderful rock movement that was going on. Crosby, Stills, and Nash were coming up then, and I mean, there was incredible rock music, and we loved it, but it was fun being kind of the quirky group, you know?
Sure. You know, I'm going to take you back to my favorite songs by the Manhattan Transfer. It's still a song today that it stays in my head, which is a good thing because it's a good jam. Soul Food to Go.
Oh, that's a great song. That's a great song. But understand, long after I left, that was done, I think, probably in the mid-80s, right?
Yep, around 87, I'm thinking, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I was, at that point, living in Hawaii. I left the Transfer only after about, say, 5 years, and went on to do a lot of studio work in New York. I did tons and tons of background vocals and commercials and toured with a lot of great bands, with Greg Allman, which was an amazing tour, back in the 70s, right, after Dwayne had died. He, you know, decided to try to pick up the musical pieces and, do a tour back then. And, so I did that and worked with Leonard Cohen in Europe and, you know, Paul Butterfield and all kinds of fun things like that.
Wow. So, Erin, when did exactly start for you as a musician? I mean, when did the musical journey begin, when you felt that this is going to be a full-time gig and this is something I want to pursue?
You know, pretty early. I remember being very young and, you know, being in my mom's dressing room, you know, in front of the full-length mirror with a hairbrush pretending to sing songs, you know, and checking it out. And my mom figured out really early on that I was into it, and we had an opera singer in our neighborhood, and my mom traded portraits. My mother was a photographer, and she would trade portraits for singing lessons. And so I started singing lessons pretty young, and my dad got me a guitar pretty young. He was a wonderful jazz pianist, an amateur, but really a marvelous musician. And so I kind of got the passion from him. He loved it so much, and he, when he went to college, he went to the Naval Academy and had a band called the Bars and Tonics. And when he retired, he moved back to Annapolis at age 65 and found like 8 of the original 10 guys and put the band back together.
Wow.
So, you know, I started out so young doing it, and I remember being, you know, when he retired, you know, and he put that band back together, I was just old enough to, you know, sit in on guitar, and that was big excitement for me. So I've been pretty much hooked for a long, long time. I've tried to quit, too, you know. I've tried to just walk away from this romance, and I will warn you that you can't.
No, you can't. And I was going to say, I'm sure you and I can both agree, Aaron, that music is something that I personally feel that starts with inside of you. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, those inspiration and those moments when you figure out this is going to be something that I want to retire from, this is going to be it, this is it for me. I mean, it really does start at, you know, with your parents or whoever inspired you, open that right. musical gateway where you're just drawn to it. I mean, you're totally addicted to creating. I think creative people, you know, we can create at any given moment in time if you're inspired.
Right.
You know, it's new and you just want to jump in everything that you put your ears to.
Right, I know. And you get so excited about it. You know, I had a very hard time choosing what kind of music to do because I like it all so much. You know, I could be very easily led down the path to rock and roll without much enticing. A lollipop would probably do it, you know?
Yeah, totally.
Because it's so seductive and it's so, I think it's on such a cellular level, you know, that we become impassioned with music and the creative process. And those times, usually at 2 a.m. when a lyric hits you or you're in the studio and you find something vocally that solves it and makes the song come to life, is just, it's worth, you know, golfers talk about how they have a lousy day and they hit one bad shot after another and finally they hit a drive that goes 300 yards down the center of the fairway and they always say, oh, okay, I guess I'll come back again. And it's, you know, it's like that with music. When you find those moments, it's worth all the struggle to get there and to get inside it and all the hard work and everything that goes around it, don't you think?
Oh, I totally agree with you. I can't agree with you more. You know, aside from being inspired, Aaron, I mean, I know your parents were a huge influence on your musicianship and just growing up as a musician in the household. I mean, who were some of the other influences that inspired you to become a great vocalist and a performer that you are today?
You know, it's so varied. I like I said before, I'm so passionate about so many kinds of music that it's hard to even put a finger on it. I of course, I'm totally influenced by Ella, and I'm heavily influenced by the early Manhattan Transfer years and what I learned about jazz voicings and harmonies and how rich that all is and phrasing. But early on, I fell in love with Big Mama Thornton, who had a tune called Roll With Me Henry, which I just couldn't get enough of and used to perform live. But also I was really influenced a lot by Sting, by Randy Newman, by Linda Ronstadt. A lot of the rock singers, too, bring a lot to the table. And Tony Bennett is maybe my favorite jazz singer in terms of his phrasing and stuff. And John Hendricks, who, you know, the master.
Yeah.
You know, you can't. I mean, it's one of those things. Like every time somebody asks me this, I go, "I'm gonna forget somebody really major."
Yeah, no. I mean, but you know what? I mean, that's where the artist, we bring that out in our music. You know what I mean? I mean,
right.
Someone who's really in tune to music knows and can hear those influences through you. You know, I
right.
tell people, I said, there's a difference between copying, and there's another different side of it of showing your inspiration. Because I feel that when you're showing
right.
the inspiration, on top of that is you. You know, you're,
right.
you're painting a picture, an audio picture, and delivering
right,
that to
right.
our fans. And, you know, we can definitely hear those influences. I definitely hear a lot of Ella Fitzgerald in your attacks and your vocals, especially
oh,
on the new CD,
thank
Nice
you,
Girls.
Thank you. Oh, my goodness. You know, I think what's interesting about it is that the thing that draws me that is so seductive to me, well, there's two things. One is a lyric. I like a lyric. There are some songs I do that, frankly, I have to practice for a few months because every time I do them, I feel them so strongly I start crying. And I have to do them enough that I can get past the crying so that I can sing them for somebody else.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Not because they're that sad, but because they're that right on.
Yeah, oh yeah.
You know, and they hit something so deep in my soul that it makes me cry. And
definitely.
The other thing that really hits me is rhythm. And I'm not a singer who's, I'm not a fancy singer, I'm not real choppy, and I do a lot of really quick licks and flurries and turns and stuff because because of the lyric and because of the feel, I find myself wanting to just be inside the rhythms of the songs, and they totally drive my phrasing. I never know what's going to come out of my mouth, but it's directly correlated with whatever the piano player just played in his left hand or whatever Phil, the drummer, just did. And I find that, you know, don't you feel sometimes when you're playing music like your feet just leave the ground?
Oh, totally. You hit that zone, you know, it's over.
It's so cool. It's so cool. You know, you kind of like, you know, sometimes I have to say, stop, focus. The next verse is coming.
Right.
Don't get lost. You're the singer. You can't get lost now.
Right.
But because, you know, it gets so exciting, you know?
It is, but you brought up a good point, though. I mean, fancy riffs and fancy attacks, it's cool. But for me as a producer and a musician, I love consistency of somebody that can actually hold a note and stay consistent throughout the song. I mean, the first 10 seconds of your voice is great, but what about the rest of the 3 minutes and 40 seconds? I mean, are you going to keep my attention? Am I going to see the good vocal range? And how are you harmonizing and those different phrasings that are coming out? I mean, that's where I feel that a good singer is standing out. The flashiness is okay, but it's not going to sound good on a CD. You can't do that all day long, you know. So.
No, because it just, you become numb to it. It ceases to be important. And, you know, I find so many, like, especially really young singers, until they kind of find it, and young guitarists do this too. They just play at it. They play on top of it.
Oh yeah.
They're not letting the music move them. And for me, it's about establishing the melody that the composer wrote, the way he wrote it, and then opening my soul and letting my authentic me come out to tell the story from my point of view, which means developing it a little bit phrasing wise and developing it a little bit melodically by changing some things. But most importantly, connecting with the listener so he's feeling what I'm feeling. Because that's the job, you know?
It is, totally.
Now, as a singer, I mean, that's the job.
It's totally a job. You know, and in addition to that, Aaron, I want to talk about harmonizing with other vocalists. You know, I feel that that's a personal skill within itself. You know, having the ear to stay on pitch and also knowing your parts without singing over other people's notes. Like, hey, man, you're on my tune. Get on your own note.
Right,
you know?
Right.
You know, what are some of the own practices that you still use today to keep that ear in tune so you're able to jump in and find your placements and find that center as a vocalist within the track?
Well, I think if you're talking about harmony, for me, the easiest way to learn a harmony is to learn it as a melody and sing it along with the track as a melody so that I understand it as a melody. And then when the next singer comes with their melody, I'm not influenced by them in terms of losing mine because I have my very own, which is just as important as theirs. But I think what's really crucial about harmony singing is learning how to make a blend, is learning how to manipulate your voice and to fit with theirs, and they, of course, will do the same with you. And when you have four very different singers, you know, for me, I often broaden my sound a little bit and make it a little breathy and a little less vibrato so that you have more of a landscape of sound rather than something pointed, you know, because some people hear pitch a little above, some people hear a little bit below, some people have a sharp vibrato, some people have a long, you know, tree-shaking vibrato, and all those things make cacophony if they're not managed, so to speak. And when you find that sweet spot and you've all just kind of gotten your tones to become one, it's a rush beyond belief. It's because you really are singing with one voice, you know?
Yeah.
But to keep my ear sharp and stuff, I do two things. I practice my songs for hours, you know, the real melodies and what was written, to really get inside what my voice will do and what it won't do. And I sing some pretty bad notes when I do that. You got to get those out, you know, you got to get them out. And then I often in the car when I'm driving will listen to a track that I'm working on and then just start scatting to it. And then I do some really, really bad notes. But that starts to teach me where I can go in terms tonally in terms of the chords and the changes and the musicians. And so, again, you sing a lot of bad notes. And actually a funny story on that is I drive back and forth to Philadelphia where my husband has a house a few times a week. It's like 2.5 hours. And that's where I practice. It's perfect. Only I travel with a dog and a cat. And my Siamese cat has decided that he doesn't like me singing. So every time I open my mouth, the cat's going, row, he's singing along, man, and he doesn't know how to blend, you know?
Yeah. But that's cool, though. You know, I talk to a lot of guys, and you know, I can't stress enough the importance of practice. You know, getting back to those grassroots of rehearsing and learning your craft. I mean, I don't think anyone's at a point where we're totally comfortable. And, you know, I think it's really cool that we're secure and comfortable enough to know that we're making mistakes in practice. We're supposed to make mistakes in practice and rehearsal, so we're 100% when performing or recording. You know, so it's like, man, let's go where we couldn't go before in practice. And if it works, you know, let's develop it and make it strong and something that we could work towards for recording. So, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. Definitely.
Right. And another great jazz trick told to me years ago by my friend Robbie Condor, who's a wonderful keyboard player. He said, if you hit a wrong note when you're scatting, just hit the same note 3 or 4 times in a row. And sooner or later, it'll be the right note.
Oh, totally. Or at least we think it is anyways when we hear it. It's supposed to be there.
That's right.
Now, I want to talk about your new CD, Nice Girls, Aaron. You know, I love a great mix. For one, the engineering on it is A1.
It is.
Yeah.
I agree.
Oh, my God. Yeah,
I don't say so myself.
Yeah, the mic placements, the pre's that you guys use, the converse, it's, top-notch all the way. But another thing that really stood out was the musicianship, from the drummer to the keyboardist to the vocalist, of course. And to the bass, the upright bass. I mean, it was just phenomenal. I mean, how did that project come together, and how was it selecting those musicians to play on that album?
Well, I got one word for you. Facebook.
Good old Facebook.
I have a lot of really great friends from New York from back in the day when I was a studio singer. And, you know, in the 80s, New York was just the mecca of the recording industry, and we would go from studio to studio. We'd sing a background on a CD, and then we'd go in and sing something about for Ford, and then we'd go do another background, and then everybody'd have lunch, and then, you know. So we knew these guys really well, so many of them. I mean, I saw Steve Gadd and Will Lee and Sid McGuinness and Marvin Stamm. Every day I saw these people.
Wow.
But one of my great friends is a guy named Rob Mounsey, who is extraordinary as a human and as a musician, and he's a wonderful pianist. He's ruined me basically, because no one will ever live up to his style and grace and ears and listening ability, but he's also a wonderful arranger. In fact, he's out on the road right now with Idina Menzel and doing symphonic concerts, and has written most of these orchestrations himself, and they are just to die for. And he's worked with everybody from Paul Simon to Michael Franks to Madonna to Beyonce to Tony Bennett. I mean, his resume is just stop a truck. But so I'm on Facebook one day, and Rob's talking to somebody on his wall, and he was going back and forth with somebody about this and that, and what'd they say, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I had just come home from dinner with my husband and had a nice big glass of wine, and I got on Facebook. And I said to Rob, the guy said you're the greatest musician that ever lived. You want to play on my CD?
Wow.
My husband says, Aaron, stop typing. Don't type. It's 11:30 at night. Don't type on Facebook now.
Sure.
And Rob wrote me back in a matter of minutes and said, I would love to play on your CD. Why don't you come up to my studio and let's put it together? And so I did. And I had not met Ray Marchica before, the drummer, who is just my new all-time favorite drummer in the world. He's just, talk about somebody driving rhythms. All of my singing on that CD, Ray Marchica influenced so heavily because of his feels. He's just heaven. And so we called David Fink, who is a marvelous bass player, and also someone else who I didn't know, named François Moutin, who is from Paris, but living in New York, and who swings harder than anybody I ever met in my life.
Wow.
And he played a couple. That track, Taint What You Do, is just so swinging, I can hardly stand it. He did the bass solo on Stayin' Is the Only Way to Go. So really, we went up to Rob's studio, and I had spent, Jesse and I, my producer, had spent about 2 years really fooling around with sounds and tunes and demoing stuff. And so by the time it was time to actually track it, that was the easy part. And we went up to Rob's studio on Hudson Street, and did it in 3 or 4 sessions, and then we sweetened. Rob wrote some charts, and Jesse Frederick called some of his posse out in L.A., and we had a wonderful arranger named Nick Vincent do a couple charts. And so, you know, we kind of picked. I love how music is now. You can pick players wherever they are. You don't have to fly to L.A. if you want Bruce Watson, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. I'm a big advocate from working remotely. Everyone knows that and listens to my show, so. But, you know what's nice about the CD, Aaron, is it's, I'm always looking for a good record that can translate well on stage. Sometimes we can overproduce as producers in the studio, make a huge record, and is this going to translate well for the musicians to replicate this on stage? And I, from start to finish, I feel that every song on there will be a great live song to play on stage. You know, because it's, for one, it's live musicians. Two, it's just great melodic flavor. And three, the improv. I mean, there's so much room for improv on those songs. I mean,
That's right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so.
And I think that was part of Jesse's genius was he was all about that and really wanted the album. He said, I don't want it to sound like you're at the Blue Note because I don't want anybody coughing, but I want it to feel like you are.
Sure.
I want people to feel on your record how they're going to feel when they see you live. And he nailed it. The sounds, they're open sounding. It doesn't sound like the drum was in a booth, you know?
Yeah.
They're very open sounding, and it sounds live. And we recorded the trio live, and, you know, there wasn't that much sweetening. We kept it to a minimum because we didn't want that feeling of all these layers. I mean, I could go out with 8 pieces and recreate this easily, you know, which is great. And that's so fun for me. In fact, when we did the release concert, hearing these charts live for the first time, I was just a mess. I was beside myself.
Wow. I can imagine. No, it's great work. I mean, you have every right to feel that way, Aaron. I mean, it's really great. It's timeless. I mean, this is a CD that I feel 10, 15 years from now, it's not going to sound dated.
Yeah, I hope not. You know, I don't think it will.
No.
Sonically, it's just kind of authentic, good jazz with good players and, you know, simple. Keep it simple, stupid, you know?
Oh, yeah. Now, as a keyboardist, Aaron, you know, I'm a huge fan of playing covers. I love playing covers and remakes of other artists and musicians that I admire. Are there any songs out there that you haven't had a chance to remake that you would love to make it your own as a fan?
There's one I'm working on right now, which is really hard and is really, really cool, and I'm excited about it. And it's a tune by George Shearing called Conception. And George Shearing, you know, has his own kind of sound in terms of voicings and chord progressions. And he wrote this thing called Conception that's kind of a little outside, but John Hendricks wrote a vocalese to it.
Wow.
And what really excites me about it is a friend of mine in Europe told me about it and was able to sing it to me. He knew it. He'd learned it in conservatory as a teenager. And so we then set out to try and find a vocal recording of it. And if anybody out there knows of a vocal recording of it, I would love to hear it. So I've got the lyric, I've got the vocalese part, I have the notes written down, but I've never heard anybody else sing it. So I'm working on it right now, and it's so cool. I'm very excited about that.
Oh, man, that's excellent. See, that, I mean, that's,
yeah.
For me, that's what it's all about. I mean, it's, you get a lot of people like, well, I don't want to touch a good classic. I mean, it's a good song. Leave it the way it is. We're not changing anything. Paying homage to the great work that you've done and the possibilities of my interpretation of your composition. You know, the adding and just adding little dynamic, little phrasings here and there, but still maintaining the song in itself. But yeah, just to be able the ability to, you know, remake a song is just where it's at for me. So yeah, I would love to hear that when you're done.
Oh yes, it's very fun. And actually, you know, I just did a live recording to and some videotaping at a beautiful theater down here where I live, and we did Duke Ellington's Squeeze Me, which is a great tune.
Yeah.
And my booking agent, just for fun, put together like an hour-long segment of different versions of women singing Squeeze Me, different jazz singers.
Yeah.
And he starts playing this for me. I'm like, no, turn it off. I cannot listen to this before I sing this song because you get so muddled. I mean, there's so much to gain and there's so much to listen to. There's so much to love. But then you lose who you are, you know, and you want to say to yourself, well, why would I even do that song? These girls have done this so brilliantly. Why am I You have to stop and isolate yourself from everybody else's version and dig deep and find out what your message is and what your voice is, you know?
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. You know, putting your own stamp on it, that's where it's at.
Yeah.
You know, Aaron, the industry has changed a lot within the past 15 years. You know, the way we market and promote our records. What step have you taken, you know, or maintained to establish a good fan base and along with capturing the attention of other writers and producers that would like to work with you on future projects?
Well, you know, the good news is I just had a songwriter send me a whole packet of tunes. How cool is that?
Wow.
That's the first time that's happened to me in a long time. It's funny, I probably spend more time on PR and social media than I do on practicing right now. And I have to just break from it and find time to dig, to, you know, really immerse myself in music. But I think the most important thing is, there's so many most important things. I think that being in front of people for me is the most important because a lot of people don't buy CDs in this country. And I think that the job really is to be a messenger for joy. At least that's the way I see it. Because I think people come to concerts to forget about their problems and forget about daily life and to be enlightened by music, you know, to be lightened up by it. And so I think that as musicians, as great as the contributions are and as great as it is to have the physical record of our work, spending time in front of audiences is where it's at. And I think it's how you change people's whole spiritual vibration, and I think it's how you heal the planet, you know, even if it's one person at a time or 50 people or 1,000 people at a time. And so I've been working really hard on PR, on social media, getting my product reviewed, getting it out there in front of people, doing small concerts now. But I've been working on setting up tours for 2012 and 2013 in Europe and Asia, where there's a really huge jazz scene. Easier jazz scene, I think, to tap into because there's so much more of it.
I agree.
And so I think that working there will support my hobby, my craft, my habit, my passion, you know, and enable me to get in front of bigger audiences here. But there's less available for jazz singers here. I'm sad to say. It's our invention, and it's always startling to me when I see that other places in the world love it or appear to love it more. You know, there are not as many venues, and it's not as easy to support oneself doing that. So, you know, for me, I think staying in front of people, doing an album every 2 years, maybe every 3 years, is where it's at. But social media has been my interface.
I agree. You know, it's one thing as musicians, you know, 15, 20 years ago, even 30 years ago, I mean, we had no choice but to really focus on the craft and, you know, usually have a team of people that handles our marketing and promotions. But now with the push of independent projects and our own independent releases and our own distribution control, you know, we kind of had to put on more hats other than just being a musician, you know, a PR, right. You know, business, adventure, label, you know, we're taking on many hats.
Graphic artist.
Oh, totally. Oh, yeah. I forgot about the graphics. I need the CD covers.
Right.
But, you know.
Right. Writing the press.
Oh, gotcha.
Writing the releases.
But what's nice about it, Aaron, maybe you can agree or disagree. I feel that by us having the control, we can really target our market of who's going to listen and who's going to purchase CDs and give the audience a choice of what's out there and what they want to choose from instead of the industry putting certain artists in front of you and, you know, not even knowing that the other artists were out there as a discovery. So I love the control of it, definitely.
I totally agree, and I'll go you one more, and that, for what blows my mind, is the personal interaction on a one-to-one basis with my fans on Twitter and Facebook.
Oh,
they're from all over the world, you know, and like, for example, last week, I actually put it up this week, but about 3 weeks ago, we lost a gal named Pat Rosalia, who's a wonderful jazz singer, songwriter, who was one of the founding members of Manhattan Transfer. And we're all pretty heartbroken about it. And so I wrote a blog about it, about her and her life and her work. And all the original members of the Mantran all wrote a piece, and I put it up on Facebook, and people commented from all over the planet. New friends, old friends, jazz lovers, people who knew her. And, you know, you feel this support. You know, I've got a great friend in Russia who I talk to all the time, and wow, a wonderful jazz guitarist in South America who drew me this fantastic charcoal portrait. And, you know, I feel like when I go to South America, I want to go play with him, you know?
Oh, totally, yeah.
It's so, that is so cool, because you are actually talking to people who are hungry to hear about your music.
Yes.
It's not in the hands of some PR agent who's making it up.
Oh, totally, yeah. And
you know what I mean? Don't you love that?
I do. You know, especially doing my show, I get a lot of people that always email me and, you know, it's like, oh, man, I'm a huge fan of such and such. Oh, I've been listening to their music for years, and like you said, they're across seas. Like, gosh, man, they're listening to my show in England, London, and Brazil, and right, China, and Japan. It's like, gosh, this would not be possible for me 10, 15 years ago, you know, just to have
that's
an interaction.
Right.
And just for them to receive an email back that we acknowledge you and we read your email, I mean, that's just gives
I know,
them
isn't that, doesn't that blow your mind?
Oh, yeah, man, just to have that validation, it's just, it's great. I love it.
Yeah, it's great, and you find, you know, I love hearing back from the fans. I mean, you can put on Facebook, you know, okay, I'm learning 4 new songs. Give me some ideas. You know, and you'll get like 50 song ideas.
Oh, yeah.
And that's, it's great because it's wonderful to have help and support, but you also then get to understand what your audience wants to hear.
Exactly.
It's so fun. I just think it's a really great thing. I think it makes it hard. I think it, people don't know how to navigate. You know, one of the great things that Starbucks does when you go to Starbucks is there's 4 albums for sale. So it's not hard to pick if you're in the mood to pick something up.
Oh, nice, yeah.
But navigating what we have to navigate to find, you know, new things to listen to, it takes people like you, people who have, there's a great jazz station that I listen to called Adore Jazz that I love, that, you know, handpicks vocal jazz. But there is such a wealth of material out there that it's hard to know where to go, what to do. How do you find the new artists? You know,
yeah,
that for me is the downside.
It is. There's guys out there. We got to put our heads together and create some better gateways for people to, you know, grab a hold of the music. You know, just make
right,
a couple of centralized locations, not 65,000. You know, because again, it gets overwhelming, and you'll probably stop before you're done searching. You know,
that's right. It's kind of like fine wines. I used to kind of know what was going on in the wine world, but not anymore.
Yeah, take your pick. Huh?
Just too much. You can't. You know, I now go into the wine store and say, "What's good?"
No, yeah, I got you.
You know, which is why I think people rely on podcasts and radio shows and internet radio broadcasts and reviews, and really, really rely on these indie people who are out there listening to all of it and trying to pick the good stuff, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree with you. You know, we're approaching 2012, Aaron. I mean, what's on the musical agenda left over for 2011? Oh, I know. I wish I could slow it down.
No! Well, I just saw that my producer, Jesse Frederick, finally downloaded the 11 or 12 songs I sent him last week as ideas for the next CD. And we're having dinner Friday, so I'll be very curious to see what he thinks about my new thoughts.
Nice.
Not that I want to record in 2012. I really want to perform, and I have something coming up in the spring in Asia, and then some jazz festivals in the summer, and hopefully a couple of wonderful short tours with some jazz orchestras that are well-known overseas. I don't want to spill the beans altogether, you know.
No, that's fine.
Until these things are inked. But it's, for me, 2012 is about performance and about expanding my repertoire in ways that I haven't either had the time or the nerve to do.
Wow, that's got a heavy plate there. Definitely.
Yeah, man, I think I'll be busy, right? And to think, you know, yesterday I was thinking I wanted a puppy. I don't think I better get a puppy.
Oh, no, yeah, that's a job in itself. I don't have a puppy. I have a full-size grown dog, and she takes all of my attention along with my wife, so I definitely hear you there. Stay away. Stay focused on
the
music.
Yeah, back away from the puppy. I've got a full-grown dog, too, and I look at my poor husband, you know, whenever I leave to do a little tour, the dog and my husband have the same look in their eyes, so I don't think we need to add any more to the misery.
Well, Erin, it's been a pleasure talking with you. I would love to have you back and talk about your new musical endeavors, your performances across seas. I can't wait to hear it and talk about it again with you.
Well, thanks so much, Spud. And you know, before we go, I had a chance to listen to some of your cuts from your new upcoming release, and I just wanted to tell you how much I enjoy them. It's, you know, obviously very different stylistically from what I'm doing, but beautifully done, beautifully produced, and I wish you so much luck and happiness and hope it goes really great for you.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate that. Thank you.
You are so welcome. From one artist to another, you know, rock on.
Hey, that, you know, for me, that goes a long way, Erin. I really wanted to capture the attention of my musical peers, you know, along with the audience, but, you know, having the feedback and validation from my other music community really, really means a lot to me, and this is why
it
I have
does,
my
yeah,
show here,
yeah.
So I really thank you.
Well, thanks so much, Bud, and I can't wait to hear it and get together another time, and maybe we'll cross paths at a concert one of these days.
Sounds like a plan, Erin. Looking forward to it. Have a great, safe 2011, and bring in the new year of 2012.
Thank you, sir.
Have a good one.
All right.
Bye. And a big shout out and thank you to Erin Dickens for coming on the show and chopping it up with me. It's real cool talking to Erin. For one, she's a huge fan of music. And on top of that, she's an excellent vocalist herself. And she really demonstrates her talents on her new CD, Nice Girls. For more information on Erin Dickens, you need to check out her website at www.erindickens.com. www.erindickens.com. And for my past and current interviews, you can hit me up at www.sputtootight.com. www.sputtootight.com. And I'm also available on iTunes as a podcast, so if you have a Mac or a PC, an iPod or an iPad, open up the iTunes store, type in the Producer's Corner with Spud Too Tight, click on my image, and you'll have a list of my past and current interviews as well. And to close out the show, I'm going to let the track that's playing in the background close out the show. And the title of the track is called I Must Have That Man, and it is by Erin Dickens off her new CD, Nice Girls. So I want to thank everybody for tuning and listening in. Until next time, you guys keep it tight. Peace. That boy can cheat. Oh, but I must have that man. His heart is Hades. The lady's not safe in his arms when she's kissed. But I'm afraid that he's cooled off. Maybe I'm ruled off his lips. Never be missed. I need that person much worse than just bed. I'm half alive and he's driving me mad. He's only human, but if he's to be had, oh, I must have that man. Thank you.
afraid that he's cooled off. This time I'll be ruled off his list. I may never be missed. I need that person much worse than just bad. I'm half alive, and now he's driving me mad. He's only human, but still, if he's to be had,